You have been listening to the music of Shahram Sheba with Rumi. It's called Rumi Love Drunk. It blends the exotic and meditative. It's a mix of hip grooves and inventive arrangements with a deep, resonant, and a hypnotic voice of Shahram Sheba. Rumi, translator, performer, and author. Shahram captures the essence of Rumi's message through his passionate performances. This union of spoken verse and world music melds magic with love. And his translations of original Rumi poems have also been utilized by Western Rumi interpreters such as Andrew Harvey and Jonathan Starr, and have been printed in numerous other publications. Shahram has translated several hundred of Rumi's poems, collected in four books, and continues to translate and perform his work on an ongoing basis. He's also devised a new breakthrough method of teaching the whirling movement, where he has been conducting large-scale workshops since 1995. This method, featured on CNN, is now being taught by a few of Shahram Sheba's whirling students, including Deepak Chopra, and along with his books of Rumi poetry, which include Hush, Don't Say Anything to God, Passionate Poems of Rumi, and Rending the Veil, Literal and Poetic Translations of Rumi. Shahram has released the CD we've been listening to, Love Drunk. And this groundbreaking new audio project incorporates more than a dozen talented musicians from Persia, Europe, Latin America, and the U.S. On Saturday, June 7th at 7:30 p.m., Shahram will perform Rumi in performance at Kropala with his musical partner, Rich Goodhart, and special guest, John Ragusa. It's a musical celebration of Persian mystical poet Rumi. If you wish to know about this concert, you can call Kropala at 413-448-3400. That is 413-448-3400. And Shahram's website and Kropala's website is kropala.org, K-R-I-P-A-L-U.org, and Shahram's website is rumi.net. It's my pleasure to welcome you, welcome Shahram to In the Spirit, and he's with us right now. Hello, Shahram Sheba.
Hi, Gary. Hello. It's good to be back on your show.
It's always good to have you with us, and it's always good to spend some time on the air in this wonderful opportunity to bring radio to the listeners through the media of music and poetry.
Music and poetry, yeah, and it's and self-expression and self-growth and everything else. Everything falls into when you talk about Rumi, you can cover so many different things, even. The idea of being a free thinker or being a maverick, they all fit into the personality of Rumi.
We've talked about this before and about Rumi. He holds such a creative hold on our imagination. His poetry is, how would you describe his poetry to the modern mind?
Well, the reason Rumi... one of the reasons that Rumi is popular everywhere is because his focus has been humanity, and he covers topics that any person who thinks and feels his way through life ponders from time to time. So Rumi would be timeless, you know, 5,000 years ago. And 5,000 years from now, because the issues that he taps into are basically eternal.
Thank you. Saying that, Shahram, I'd like your permission to read one of your translations of Rumi from your book, Hush, Don't Say Anything to God. Would that be okay? Passionate
yeah,
Poems?
Yes, anytime, by all means.
He had a lot to say about love, I know. In this translation, he writes... Your love is the source of passion for all the love there is. It burns my soul night and day. Don't look for the ashes. You won't find any. They are all inside of me, layers upon layers, all inside of me. Even a sea of passions and seductions could not wash these ashes away. Wait until I am dead. If they open me up, you will find 1,000 eyes staring you in the face.
Well, that's one of actually Rumi trademarks is that he's not sappy. You know, I mean, he doesn't give you some ultra flowery, kind of a passive, you know, mellow, you know, for lack of a better word, boring love poem. There's always a twist, and the twist is what people react to. If this was some straight out love poem, which would have ended before the whole eyes and the ashes and all that, it would be quite sappy, and he would not have been popular. He doesn't insult your intelligence. I think that's a very if I were to describe Rumi, there's so many ways to describe him, but in one short way is that he doesn't insult your sense of creativity or and so forth. So it's always fun to read Rumi. I mean, I've been translating 2008 is the 20th year that I've been translating Rumi.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So, I have a tendency of wanting to move on quite often from things. I tend to kind of have part of my personality has that been there, done that kind of an attitude. But when it comes to Rumi, he's not somebody that you can easily overcome. He is he's a world-caliber artist. He is on par with Beethoven, Mozart, Shakespeare. You know, he can be loved and admired and studied and enjoyed for lifetimes. He was very, very prolific, and we've talked about this on your show many times. So, you know, he put out about 70,000 verses of poetry, about 8,000 or 9,000 poems, and he's covered every imaginable topic. However, you know, and this is not a surprise, one of the favorite topics of Rumi that are very popular are the love poems. Again, it's understandable why that is, you know, but he has, you know, thousands of poems that don't involve love at all. You know, he has poems that are teachings. They're basically, it's what I call guiding words for the students of spirituality. But the ones about love are the most popular. And I think, you know, if you recall, we talked about this, that people like Rumi, the classic Persian poets who put love above all else, and the yearning for love, and being drunk on love, and being ill because of love, they have been the source for American blues. The concept of I got the blues has a direct connection to when Rumi says that I'm ill because of love. They didn't use the word blues, but that is a direct connection. And we talked about it last time.
I know in reading Rumi, he uses a lot of metaphors.
Yes. It's almost all metaphors, actually.
Because if you look at, for instance, the one poem where he says, there is a certain love that is formed out of the elixir of the east. There is a certain cloud impregnated with 1,000 lightnings. There is my body in it, an ocean formed of his glory. All the creation, all the universes, all the galaxies are lost in it.
Yes.
So
They were, these guys were genuine, free-thinking scientists / spiritualists. The word spiritualist really has been watered down to nothing but a hallmark, new age, you know, passionless, soulless, just a product. And that is a shame. When people think about spirituality, they think about granola and yogurt. I mean, that is quite embarrassing. You know, for me, it's embarrassing as a spiritualist to be associated with that. Spiritualists are the most powerful people on the planet. We are the most fiery people on the planet. We are the ones who bring about changes. We are the ones who fight darkness. You can't fight darkness, in a sense, with granola and yogurt. So it's unfortunate But it's all part of product generation that just one thing keeps feeding and another. So, you know, CDs can be sold or what have you. So Rumi is of that caliber. I mean, they were aware of unity of the individual soul with the universal soul. They were aware of the fact that there is a consistent connection between all things. They saw the biggest in the smallest and the smallest in the biggest. And of course, science is now tapping into all this. There used to be a theory called string theory, and now it's actually called M theory or membrane theory, which is there is this sheet that everything belongs to. It just kind of, if you just think about like a surface of water that things emerge out of and descend back into, this flow of creation and kind of destruction or ending of creation. It's magical. It's quite powerful, and Rumi is one of the very pioneers, in a sense, of this thought process.
Let's talk a little bit about Rumi for those that need some background. He was born in the eastern shores of the Persian Empire in about September 30th, 1207, in the city of Balkh in what is now Afghanistan, and now settled. And he finally settled into the town of Konya, which is now Turkey. Okay, Rumi's life story is full of intrigue. I'm reading from your website. And drama mixed with intense creative outbursts. He was a charming, wealthy nobleman, a genius theologian, a brilliant but sober scholar, who in his late 30s met a wandering and wild holy man by the name of Shams. In Rumi's own words, after meeting Shams, he was transformed from a bookish, sober scholar to an impassioned seeker of the truth and love. And they stayed together for a short time, about 2 years in total, but the impact of their meeting left an everlasting impression on Rumi and his work. That whole story is very interesting.
Yeah, actually, Rumi's story is quite dramatic. It would make a great motion picture if it's done right. There is, unfortunately, like anyone who... let me rephrase. Any historical figure who has dealt with spirituality, there is this unfortunate thing that happens with them through history, is that they are turned into this pristine fixture where they are presented as somebody who was perfect, they're presented as somebody who had no faults, presented as somebody who was basically a computer program, because such people have never existed or will never exist. Humanity has nothing to do with being pristine. That's just a marketing tactic. That's really, there's nothing else. It's just a spin, basically. And people buy it day in and day out. And that's the unfortunate thing, is that the public as a whole, they have never been educated enough to question. They've been conditioned to follow. But so Rumi's life was far from being pristine, and that's what makes him interesting. And he had a very fascinating life with a lot of dramas and almost soap opera-like tragedies and things like that. That, like I said, if it's presented well, it could make a fantastic motion picture.
Well, you certainly give Rumi a voice in today's world, Shahram. We're speaking with Shahram Shiva. Shahram's website is rumi.net. Why don't we listen to another one of these selections from the CD Love Drunk, Rumi Love Drunk, and with wonderful, well-produced and wonderful musicians on it. We've played this, of course, a number of times here on this program, and it's always wonderful to hear. Now, rarely has his poetry been made into almost like a song, you know, the way you do it.
Yeah, that's the credit for that, and thank you very much for that comment. The credit for that goes to my producer for the CD, Olivier Glisson. This is the style of my performances. I have been reciting Rumi in this way for a long time, and I have you know, typically the reviews are quite positive, but there have been some people where they have said, I don't understand why he can't just read. Why does he do this kind of stylized recitations? But really, it's not about them, it's about me, and this is an expression of who I am. This is how I do it. And it's not normal, because normal spoken word is somebody narrates over a bit of music. That is something I'm not interested in. Although there's a track on the CD, track 7 or 8, it's called Seven Pearls, where it is just that. But my interest is to be able to do spoken word songs, which is, there is no genre for it, and I don't really know other people who do it. Leonard Cohen comes to mind, you know, legendary Leonard Cohen, but he borders more on singing than spoken word. And maybe Tom Waits a little bit. But so the trick was finding a right producer who could actually make this work on a CD, you know, to create spoken word songs. And Olivier was the right guy, and he pulled it off. So the CD as a whole is Olivier Glisson's vision.
Yes. Well, it's beautifully rendered.
And thank you.
Yes, thank you. And after this, I want to talk to you about what's going on Saturday night at Kropalo.
Sure.
Yeah. And so we're going to be right now we're going to be dipping in to this CD, Rumi Love Drunk. Dipping in, I say, because that's the way it feels like to me when you just dip right into it. Here it is. This is Love Drunk, the title.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The lover is ever drunk with love. She is free. He is mad. She sings with delight as he dances in ecstasy. Caught by our own thoughts, we worry about everything. But once you get drunk on that love, whatever will be, will be. عاشق همه سال مست و رسوا بادا، دیوانه و شوریده و شیدا بادا. با هوشیاری قصه هر چیز خوریم، چون مست شویم هرچه بادا. چون مست شویم هرچه بادا بادا. Caught by our own thoughts, we worry about everything. But once we get drunk on that love, but once we get drunk on that love, whatever will be. با هوشیاری قصه هر چیز خوریم، چون مست شویم هرچه بادا بادا، هرچه بادا بادا. The lover is ever drunk with love. Lover is ever drunk with love. Drunk on that love. Whatever will be, will be. Dance in ecstasy. Dance in
That's Love Drunk from the CD Rumi Love Drunk, rendered beautifully by Shahram Sheba, a wonderful artist on this as well. And we're, right now we're going to have a public service announcement, which I will read. The Sage College's Occupational Therapy Program is offering an 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction program for people with chronic physical illness that is free of charge to eligible participants. The program is modeled on the Stress Reduction Clinic at the University of Massachusetts Medical Center. Instruction will be given in an array of mindfulness methods tailored to meet individual needs. Program participants are required to engage in 2-hour orientation sessions on September 11th from 5:30 to 7:30, weekly 2 to 3 hour early evening classes for 8 consecutive weeks starting September 25th, and 1 full day silent retreat on the 6th week of the course. For information, please call Barbara Thompson at thompb@capital.net. That's thompb@capital.net, or call 518-244-3112. 518-244-3112. That's the Sage College's Occupational Therapy Program, an 8-week mindfulness-based stress reduction course for people with chronic physical illness. Thank you. And hello, Shahram.
Hi, Gary.
Yes. And that piece, Love Drunk, could you say anything? Would you like to talk about that?
Love Drunk is, I think it's the most rhythmic piece on the CD, and it has a bit of a flamenco style. It's title track. It's basically, it's going to be very festive, very positive, and light. It's one of Rumi's lighter poems where he talks about abandonment and basically don't worry too much, don't think too much, just try to enjoy life.
Okay, well, thank you. And that's from a number of selections here on the CD, Rumi Love Drunk. By the way, people that are interested in having this CD for themselves, they can they can go to your website, correct?
Yeah, the CD itself has its own website, which is lovedrunk.com. And if they go there, if they want to listen to the CD, there's a link to my MySpace page that has, I think, 6 cuts from the CD that they can listen to. And they can download it from Amazon, iTunes, eMusic, a bunch of other places, and they can purchase the CD itself if they want to actually get the physical CD from Amazon and CD Baby. But the links are all on lovedrunk.com.
Lovedrunk.com, very good. So, Saturday night, Rumi and Performance, Concert and Whirling Workshop at Kropalo. Tell us, this Kropalo Center is a great place to have this, isn't
yeah.
it?
You've been there.
You've been there a number of times. Saturday, June 7th, in the evening, you can contact Kropalo at 1-800-741-7353. But easy enough to go to rumi.net. Well, that information is for events. Click on events. Now, this is a wonderful event. You're going to have, you conduct these with Rich Goodhart, and there's a special guest, John Ragusa, with you.
Yes. Last time that I was at Kropalo was in February or March. Actually, I have to look up the schedule. Maybe it was April. Forgive me for not being accurate. But it was around that time. It probably was March, if I'm not mistaken. And we had, as a guest, a musician, we had Steve Gorn with us.
That's right.
And I was listening to your show earlier where you were mentioning Steve Gorn. He's a master bansuri flute player. And that was an amazing show.
You know, he's joining us in the studio. Steve Gorn is next month.
Terrific.
Yeah.
And you were there.
Yes, I was there.
Yes, you were there.
Yeah.
So for this show on the Saturday night, the 7th, we are going to have this dynamic and truly fantastic flute player named John Ragusa. Rich Goodhart and John have known each other for, I think, 20 years, something like that. I have known John and I've worked with him for about 10 years, probably more than that. And John Rich and I used to basically do room events as a trio. So this is basically a reunion for the three of us. And it promises to be just incredible. Of course, Rich is an amazing multi-instrumentalist, whom people who have heard him, he for every piece, he brings out another exotic instrument. Some of them he builds himself. But for this event, we're also going to have John Ragusa with us. And John plays a variety of different types of flutes. So throughout the program, people may end up hearing maybe six or seven different types of flutes. It's very, very fantastic. And he has a, like I said, has a very dynamic style in playing the flute.
Well, thank you. Sharam, would you like to read some poetry for us?
I'd rather have the CD do, or I actually rather have you read some poetry.
Well, why don't we do, you have quatrains, odes and quatrains on your website.
Yes.
Why don't I read a couple of them?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, and there's one I want to read in particular is because this was made, you, Linda Worcester, and you put this to music on Who Dosed CD. It is your turn now?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And since when I heard that's one of the, it is a fabulous piece of music.
Yes.
And that's the, and then, but it's a beautiful, they were these words are the lyrics of the song. And it is your turn now. You waited. You were patient. The time has come for us to polish you. We will transform your inner pearl into a house of fire. You're a gold mine. Did you know that? Hidden in the dirt of the earth. It's your turn now to be placed in fire. Let us cremate your impurities. You know, when I read this, I'm really struck by the dynamic imagery.
Yes, it's well, part of it really is the process of bringing it into English. And I can explain that a little bit. If you think about Shakespeare, and if you think about translating Shakespeare into Chinese, or translating Shakespeare into Arabic or into Persian or Hebrew, anything like that, or even into maybe French, although French would probably work well, is a lot of Shakespeare is lost in the process of translation because Shakespeare is not just about the words or about the content as in the plot or characters, character developments, or basically the storyline. Shakespeare is much more than that. So how do you transfer, you know, what an English, a fairly well-educated English-speaking person hears in Shakespeare for the Chinese or for the Persians? How do you do that? And it's the answer to that is it's a very, very difficult thing. It's first off, it's impossible, but you try anyway. Mm. And the way that you do it is that first off, you can't try to recreate Shakespeare. That means if there are rhyming couplets or if there is a system of expression that the original author is doing, you do not want to copy that because you're going to kill it right off the bat. So what you want to do is you want to come across as if in the new language that you're translating to, as if the person who wrote it was from there. So you, if you want to, for example, let me just clarify. If you want to translate Shakespeare into Persian, you would have to cut a lot of it out, and you would have to put it into Persian with a certain style that would then make Persians feel like Shakespeare was Iranian. This is the magic of correct translation, which is not just translation. It's not just a scholarly word-for-word translation, but an artistic recreation. Unless the artistic recreation happens, the work, unfortunately, is not appreciated by the public. it's only kind of read by the scholars. So that's what happened to Rumi in English. In 1970s, Coleman Barks started doing artistic renditions of Rumi with no knowledge of Persian. And in 1980s, I started doing that. You know, and in addition with doing those, I was also simultaneously doing literal translations for people who were interested in the true voice of Rumi in Persian.
Mm-hmm.
So the artistic rendering is what makes Rumi accessible in the West, and it would not have happened otherwise.
Well, thank you for doing your work, which is making this available, which is closer to the, it's right from the Persian, which is, we really do appreciate, and so we can get closer to the general feel of Rumi. In fact, you actually present in concert Rumi in Persian. You actually some of the poems you recite in its original language.
Yes, I am from there. I'm actually, and I know many people know this, most people who are working with Rumi today don't have knowledge of Persian. They usually use what's available, what has already been translated, and they recreate that, which is fine. But I was born in the same province as Rumi, and I lived in Iran until I was 16 before I came here. One of the good things about translation is that you need to be good, you need to be actually good to great, in the language that you're translating to. You don't have to be amazing in the language that you're translating from. And that worked out well for me, because my higher educations were in the U.S., not in Iran. But I've always had a very very strong connection with Rumi. So although I do creative renderings of Rumi, I still try to bring some of the flavor of the original Persian, because the original Persian is magic.
Which selection on Love Drunk has some of the original Persian in it?
Actually, the cut we just heard, Love Drunk, that has some Persian in it. There is a cut called Seven Pearls that I recite seven quatrains. That has Persian in it. There is Gathering of Lovers that has Persian. There may be others that I just can't think of right this second.
Do you have a selection you would like to hear right now?
Yeah, I think we should listen to Seven Pearls.
Okay.
Which is, this is what I was talking about. This would be a traditional spoken word cut where it's narration over a bit of music, which is a contrast to the rest of the CD.
Okay, that's great, because that'll give us the variety.
Yeah.
Okay, this is Seven Pearls from Rumi, Love Drunk, Shiram Shiva.
Ni man manamo ni to toyo ni to mani. Ham man manamo ham to toyo ham to mani. Man ba to chenanam ay negare khodani. Ke andar galatam ke man toham ya to mani. Neither I am me, nor you are you, nor you are me. Also I am me, you are you, and you are me. We have become one in such a way that I'm confused whether I am you, or you are me. The lovers will drink wine night and day. They will drink until they can tear away the veils like, and melt away the layers of shame and modesty. When in love, body, mind, heart, and soul don't even exist. Become this, fall in love, and you will not be separated. Manuscript of a divine letter. You are a mirror reflecting a noble face. This universe is not outside of you. Look look inside yourself. Look inside yourself. Everything that you want, you are already that. Tonight is the night. It is the creation of that land of eternity. It is not an ordinary night. It is a wedding of those who seek unity. Tonight, the bride and groom speak in one tongue. Tonight, the bridal chamber is looking particularly bright. Go ahead, ask me. Ask me about love, and I will tell you the essence of madness. Ask me of an intellect gone mad, and I will show you a soul departed for good. Ask me of 100 calamities, of 100 life transformations. Ask me of 100 deserts engulfed in fire. Ask me of 100 oceans red with blood. Go ahead, ask me. I am an atom. You are like the continents of the sun for me. I am a patient of love. You are like medicine for me. Without wings, without feathers, I fly about looking for you. I have become a rose petal, and you are like the wind for me. Take me for a ride. روزت بستودم و نمیدانستم. شب با تو قنودم و نمیدانستم. زن برده بودم به خود که من بودم. من جمله تو بودم. نمیدانستم. By day I praised you and never knew it. By night I stayed with you and never knew it. I always thought that I was me, but no, I was you and never knew it.
I thought that I was me, but I was you and never knew it. I love that. It's something, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's something. Well, also, I think you did mention that Rumi lived about 800 years ago.
Yeah.
Today, three countries claim him as their national poet. But none of those really existed as they are today. You know, he was born on the eastern shores of the great Persian Empire. That particular area that he was born in today is called Afghanistan. And then his family migrated to an area that was by the old Byzantium or the remnants of the Roman Empire, which later on becomes known as Turkey. And, of course, Persian Empire is now an Islamic Republic of Iran, so that has changed quite a bit. Afghanistan, Iran, and Turkey, all three of them claim him as their national poet, and vehemently so, you know. I receive emails that, you know, I've had this site, Rumi.net, for over 10 years, 11 years. I still get emails from people. You know, from Turks telling me, how dare you call him Persian? You know, he was Turkish. Of course, he wasn't. He didn't even write in Turkish. Turkey didn't even exist back then, but people don't think that far. Or with Afghani saying, how dare you call him Persian? He was Afghani. You know, so it's very, very interesting. And that really is a sign of Rumi's strength, I mean, and his popularity, where kind of everyone wants to own him. Which is always a good thing.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it is a benefit to us all, we're, and around the world. So we're really fortunate that you do travel, Sharam. You live in New York City, and you have performed many different places, the United Nations, right?
Yes, yes.
United Nations, U.S. the Open Center there in New York, and many other places, Kripalu and Omega. And so you're going to tell us about your itinerary. Tomorrow, Saturday, of course, you're going to be at Kripalu with Rich Goodhart and John Ragusa. We're all looking forward to that, starting at 7:30. You can go to Kripalu. For more information, you can go to kripalu.org, K-R-I-P-A-L-U.
If you don't mind, I think we should talk a little bit about whirling.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, we have a few minutes left, and let's talk about whirling, because you have really been featuring whirling at the end of these performances. Go ahead and tell us about whirling. Is that something that Rumi invented?
No, he didn't invent. We've been whirling for thousands of years. But I know you've been to a few of my events. Do you stay for whirling usually?
Not all the time, but I did stay for one time, and my experience of it was that usually it's because I'm traveling and I want to get home a little bit of distance away. But my experience of it when I did stay was that I was surprised that I never got dizzy.
Yeah. It's when you look at children who love to spin. You know, we don't ask where they're from or, you know, what sect or religion they belong to. We have been whirling since the beginning of time. Whirling is as natural to us as walking and as, you know, kind of running. And one thing, you know, I learned whirling the old-fashioned way. As I was going through my process, I realized that the people who were teaching me whirling, who were so-called been whirling for hundreds of years, they had no method. In teaching it, they had a series of exercises that you use to be, you know, to build up your body, which was not unique to them. They're just pretty standard things, and then some breathing techniques that are used in yoga and other places, also not really unique to them. And that the whirling is just you did it till you get it, and doesn't matter if you were, you know, if it took you 6 months, a year, a few years, or you never got it. It didn't matter. And that to me was not a method. And I was very surprised to see that's how they, you know, they honored whirling as a very high form of movement, but they had no method in teaching it. And unfortunately, this is consistent with anywhere else that I've come across where they teach whirling, where they don't know how to teach it. In 1995, prior to that, I learned to whirl in the mid-80s. 1995, after about whirling for many years, I finally able to put together a method, because, you know, I am my personality is that of a teacher. So when I do learn something, in my mind automatically looks at ways of how I can teach this. And when I was learning whirling, I realized that there's no method, and this idea of whirl till you get it is silly to me. It just makes no sense. It's actually insulting, to be honest. So what I did was I was looking for ways, how can I really turn this into a method that I can teach people where they can whirl in a, you know, time frame of a workshop, not in an infinite time frame, but a time frame of a workshop to any number of people, regardless of how old they are or what physical shape they're in. And I finally managed to put together a four-step method that I started teaching it since 1995. I've done, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of workshops, really, probably over 15,000 people who have participated, and there are others who use my method. And the result of every workshop since 1995 has been completely predictable and consistent. Between 95 to 98% of the participants whirl comfortably, competently, without getting dizzy, without getting nauseous. It's really quite incredible. And it is a very simple four-step method, and I've done it at Kripalu 14 times in the past 3 years, and we're going to be doing it again. And Rich plays percussion, and now we're going to have John, he's going to play flute. It's going to be fantastic. So we're going to have that on Saturday night. We usually do an hour of performance and an hour of 45 minutes of whirling workshop. So it actually used to be a four-step method. I have narrowed it down to three-step. I have kind of, in a sense, improved it even further and made it even easier to be followed. So although three-step it doesn't sound as good as a four-step method, maybe, but it's pretty much from now it's going to be called a three-step method. So I look forward to working with people at Trupalu on Saturday night with Whirling as well.
Well, that's wonderful. I want to thank you for being with us, Sharam Sheba, our guest on this hour of In the Spirit. By the way, you can go to lovedrunk.com, find out about Love Drunk, the CD, and also Rumi.net for all information regarding Sharam's work with Rumi. Any last thing you'd like to say to our listeners?
The only thing that I want to say is that, Gary, it's fantastic to know you. It's great to talk with you, whether on your show or when we meet from time to time. You're a great individual, and thank you for having this show on the air.
Well, thank you, Sharam. Perhaps I'll get to Kripalu a little earlier, like I did last time. We had the opportunity to see each other for a short while anyway, and I'd love to get together with you some more before the show, if possible.
Sure, that would be terrific, and it would be great to see you there. I really want to know what you think about the chemistry between John and Rich. I think you're really gonna like it.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks, Sharam, very much. We're gonna close with a selection from Rumi, Love Drunk. I have the invocation cued. What do you want? Is that it? Is that okay?
Sure, go for it.
Okay.
Thank you,
Sharam. If you'd like to stay on the line, I'll speak with you for a moment.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.